Hi, dear Fox. Here I am with a new Berlinale interview. This time it's with Joel Alfonso Vargas, whose film I already could see in Sundance, but now he's here again at Berlinale. So, hi, Joel.
Thank you. Hi.
So, how does it feel to jump from one festival to the other?
Yes, it's a strange feeling. We're feeling very tired, but it's exciting, you know, just running on the adrenaline,
Especially since this is your first feature long-time movie.
Yeah.
So, do you already have a preference, Sundance or Berlinale?
I think it's too political to answer this question. But
you just worry which one is going to invite you then again if you say the others.
But I think, I mean, Berlinale is so special. Obviously, it's like I mean, in Sundance too. You know, these are great film festivals that are so important for any young filmmaker's career, you know, so I hope to be invited again with my next films. And the team at Berlin have been so accommodating to us. It's been really nice. And the gala was really nice. I'm not sure if you were here at the gala.
Unfortunately, I usually have to watch the press screening, so I cannot really go to the premieres and the galas.
Yeah, but Tilda Swinton's speech, oh my God, it was like really, really impactful. Like, it was so validating to hear. As a filmmaker, like, you know, she just instills so much purpose in what we do, you know, like, cause it's important, you know, like to, in a time when, you know, there's so much propaganda in the world to like depict and portray nuance, you know, on screen.
Exactly. And your first film, since we speak about like propaganda and all that, your first film is very close to reality. Actually, it's a story that it has some documentary aspect. So we see real people, but they play a fictional version of themselves.
Right.
How did you find the people and how did you find their story?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, the story kind of it was inspired by my upbringing and the things that I observed, like growing up in the Bronx. I come from a working class family. So I grew like I didn't experience what Rico experienced because I'm not a teen dad. Like I grew up very adjacent to these stories of like, you know, my parents were teen parents as well. The sort of casting process was really initially motivated by, you know, we wanted to find authentic like people to portray these characters. So we street cast basically. And in cities like London, you have like a lot of casting directors that specialize in street casting. In New York, you don't really have that. So we did it ourselves. So we just went with flyers around like parks and beaches, just trying to, you know, like, hey, would you be interested in being a movie? And then like we saw like, I don't know, like almost 100 sort of people like at the sort of auditions. And then we chemistry tested and through that process, tried to find the right combination of actors. And in the end, it was a combination of like, non-professional actors and professional actors, but everybody that was in the film, although they might not have been playing themselves exactly, they knew the experience, or they grew up adjacent to it, you know, so they could kind of like portray those roles very authentically. And I think that's really, you know, a strength of the film.
So your main actress, Destiny Chico, did she actually become a teen mom, or was that a fictional aspect?
That was a fictional act. So like the whole film is a work of fiction, although it feels in time, at times like a documentary. It was a work of fiction. Yeah. Like no one in the film is all fictional characters. Like,
but you said that you found those people basically in the same quarter, that they really live this working class reality. And this is something that we rarely see on screen, because usually we just see the middle class. And even the thing is that in Germany, the middle class, as referred to Germans, like the several generations of Germans and not those who had like a mixed background German immigration, it's disintegrating. So it doesn't really exist anymore, and the working class is basically usually migrant based. Is that the same in the US, that most working class people are migrant based and the white people are more like middle class?
I think in a city like New York, yes, but overall, like, the wealth disparity in the US I think is greater than in, I feel like there's more social sort of protections here, like a social safety net, you know, there's better social security and societies like Germany, right, as we know, or like the Scandinavian, like in just the European Union in general, that we don't have in the US. So like there's more diversity amongst like working class people. It's not just migrants. Like you have, like in my family's case, like, you know, we're going into like a third generation, and you know, we're still working class people, you know, like,
yeah, you never leave your class. Or maybe it takes you like a century,
And then you also have, you know, apart from New York City, because I feel like in New York City, you know, the white population has really like monopolized like the real estate and like the, you know, the you know, the wealth of the city. But like, if you go down to the south of the country, you know, or, you know, areas outside, not too far away from New York, actually, but that are more rural, you have a lot of working class white people as well. Like, you know, like, you know, Eminem, for example, you know, like, he's a white, you know, rapper from Detroit, you know, and like, that's just, you know, like, who grew up in like a trailer park and stuff. And like, you know, so you have that as well. There's just like a lot of poverty in the US that a lot of people don't really see, but
it's similar in Germany that you also don't see poverty isn't so visible anymore, and also because we have this gap between the white middle class and the white underclass, and that in between is like the migrant based working class, so the society is completely split.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously we have like migrant workers that come, from Central America or Mexico, you know, which is North America. So we have that sort of, you know, but in New York it's different because a lot of the Latino migrants to New York are not really Central American or Mexican. They're mostly Caribbean, you know, so it's a lot of Puerto Ricans, which are not really migrants. They're Puerto Ricans are Americans, but Caribbean, and then Dominicans. Like, there's a lot of Dominicans in New York City. And so like they make up a large part of the migrant workforce.
Going back to the story, like, how did you develop the dialogues? Did you really write a script, or was it more like that you told the actors what the scene was about and then they made it up organically?
So, you know, we went into the production with a very, crystallized idea of the story structure. So we knew, you know, in a very kind of like, clear way what we were going out to shoot. So we knew, like, scene by scene, the mechanics of the narrative structure. What we didn't know were like the nuances of the, you know, the dialogue or the blocking and things like that. So these are things that in the rehearsal with the cast that we ultimately cast, we kind of figured out, you know. So we I would give a premise, like, you know, the scene is about this situation, you know, this is how it starts, this is how it ends, this is like the middle moment, and then we, you know, improvise around it, and then, you know, keep working on it until we landed on something that we liked, and then we would commit that to the script, you know, like, and that was just me just recording it on my phone, listening to it at night, and then, like, because everything was so fast, we didn't have a lot of time to make this film, so, you know, on the day of shooting, you know, I would just like go back to this clip that I recorded on my phone with the cast, you know, we'll go in a quiet room and I'd play it for them. I'm like, you remember how we did it here in the rehearsal, let's try to do that again, you know. And then that's how basically I directed the film, you know.
Was it always supposed to be that story? And you said that you that kind of comes from your own upbringing, so was it always clear for you that you would tell a story about your own experience?
I mean, it's been an interesting journey, but yes, like, it was always clear that I wanted to, like, I grew up just, I mean, I'm in a place where, like, you know, I've been able to go to film school, and I've been able to sort of like go to university. You know, a lot of people from where I grew up, like, yeah, from where I was raised, like, didn't really have those opportunities. So it's like, you know, it's almost like I've always felt like a duty of like, okay, like, and it's such a specific experience. Like, there aren't many filmmaking is very, really, like, you know, like, yeah, like, monopolized by, like, you know, like, middle class people.
Totally.
With a lot of like privilege, you know. And so, like, I don't come from like privilege like that. So, you know, I'm in a fortunate position where I do have privilege. And of course, like, I want to speak on the stories that, you know, don't get the exposure, you know, place, like, from the places that I, you know, that I grew up in. So, you know. I mean, although, you know, I'm a storyteller. Like, I can tell any story, really, but there's something about these stories that, you know, are, yeah, I don't know. They're important for me.
What I really like most about the film was this authenticity of this life, because if you, as somebody who comes, I come like myself from underclass, and it's absolutely rare that I see working class or underclass authentically portrayed on film. Because there's often this cliche, like, they smoke, they drink, they are lazy, And we don't see that. In contrast, we see that they work, the mother works all the time.
Yeah.
And that's my reality. Like, I know that people from the under and the working class, we are always working. We're not like lying on the sofa as people always imagine. And also that even the son, he tries, he has all those like businesses with the drinks he makes. He's selling like those drinks, the nutties on the beach, just kind of like an American style of mixed soft drink and alcohol. So
it's like a moonshine, if you know what that is.
Exactly, something that you make at home.
Yeah.
And so everybody's all the time trying to make money because the cost of living is so exponentially high. So for you, what I wanted to ask was also, working with the people, like how much of the experience that went into the story was their experience, and were there scenes that you thought, I want to have the scene in, but then later you took it out?
Well, you know, I think the characters, although they're not portraying themselves, they're portraying fictional characters, like they've lived some part of that reality. Like Juan Collado, the actor who plays Rico, like, you know, he's he grew up in sort of like, you know, similar neighborhood, although he grew up in Brooklyn, in Bushwick, but it's, you know, it's similar poverty to the Bronx, you know, similar struggles. And so, like, he, you know, sorry, the latter part of your question. I didn't sleep very well last night.
Neither of us slept well. Did you have scenes that you first had in, but then later you took them out?
Yeah, had in. There was sort of a scene that we had in an abortion clinic. That was like a big one because it's basically the scene where Rico tries to convince Destiny to keep the baby. So like they're going to get like a consultation at an abortion clinic. And, you know, Destiny really wants to get the abortion, but Rico in that moment wants to, you know, he's like, he wants the abortion initially as well. He's like, we have to get this baby aborted. We have to do it. But then when he's at the abortion clinic and they're having the consultation with the doctor, he's like, no, like, I want to be a dad. No, we have to keep the, and in like early cuts, we kept it. But then we preferred this idea structurally of like abstracting, like the reveal of the pregnancy, because I think it's more interesting for the audience to kind of discover it as they kind of go along in the first act, as opposed to, cause like in those versions of the edit, like it was like very early in the film. So you learn about the pregnancy right away, you know? But yeah, it works better this way, in other words, but, maybe in the future, if there's a director's cut, we'll add it back, you know?
What are the filmmakers that inspire you?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's constantly shifting because there's so many influences, but I love a lot of European cinema, you know, like sort of like the people working in sort of like the realist sort of neorealist space. I don't know, like, you know, like actual like you know, historically like the Italian neorealists, but like, you know, like contemporary, like the Dardennes. I love Wim Wenders a lot. I just saw Perfect Days last year, and I loved that film. It was so impactful. Like John Cassavetes, you know, his work is sort of you know, really being the one who really, at least in the US side, pioneered this sort of, you know, working
the film
with improvisation.
With
this very natural
way of acting.
And I think his like counterpart here in Europe was Maurice Pialat, who I love a lot as well. And he made like Anna Samores and you know, Lulu and those films, which I think also like use a lot of improvisation, and they're just so like dynamic. And I love films where you can't really pin down where the story is going, you know, like you know, that have that sort of like chaos to them. And I think, you know, many films do that, but those two directors for me are like really special.
Speaking of those drinks, the natties, how did you come up with them?
I mean, I didn't come, that's something that is like a staple to New York City. Like, it's like a hustle, like, you know, you have people who sell weed or sell like, you know, other illicit things like drugs and whatever, like people sell nutcrackers. And it's just like, as you were saying, like, you know, in this community, people are constantly working, and they have, it's just more of like a lack of like formal opportunities, really. And an education system that tends to fail a lot of like young people, so that, you know, when they become kind of like older, they just turn to, you know, everybody has to make a living. It's an expensive city, so they turn to different hustles, and they don't necessarily have to be like, when we see these stories depicted often about people like working class hustling, it's like always like some like drugs or firearms or whatever it is, you know. This is actually like
kind of innocent.
Yeah,
you know?
People do quite innocent things. Like people just hustle. Like they can sell, you know, secondhand clothes or whatever it is. But there's always, you know, because it's the cost of living is high, as you said. So anyway, Nutcracker has always been a staple. It's a beverage that's so specific to this part of New York City. And like, I don't think anyone has ever made a film about it, you know? So I was like, this has to be Rico's thing, you know? And then I was, as a kid, growing up as a teenager, because, you know, in the US, you can't drink until you're 21. This was the way that as a teenager, we like gained access to alcohol. Just like, so, you know.
Just very quick final question. What's your next project? Do you already have something in mind?
The next project is, you know, tentatively, as it has to do with like the theme of gentrification in New York, you know, and like that's maybe as much as I can talk about it.
But, yeah, no, that sounds perfect. Yeah, we hope to see it here at Berlinale. Thank you, Joel Afonso Vargas.